All right, here we go. It's a Wednesday, and Overdrive is off and running. TSN 1050 on the TSN app. Your home smart speaker up on TSN 4. Brian Hayes, Jamie Noodles, McLennan, and look who is
here.
Hey, boys.
Jonas Siegel. What is up, Jonas?
I love the salad, too.
Yeah,
I saw
looking
it before
fresh.
The show. You're just enjoying yourself. I
summer
love it.
Fresh. Summer fresh. That's how I would define that. Is that how you would define it, Jonas, or what?
I would say summer fresh is pretty good, yeah.
All right.
I'm ready.
Yeah, you look like you're ready to write about 5,000 words on the future of Peter Mrazek.
Oh, my God.
What is the future of Peter Mrazek?
Yeah, what is it, the future of him? Can we figure that out or no?
I've been, like, contemplating, like, is there a world where he comes back? And then I'm like, oh, there's no way, right? Like, how can they actually improve the team? But, like, I don't know.
Well,
who's trading for him? I get, like, Chicago is one that makes sense, but
it's a package then. You have to add a sweetener in there. Like, you're not.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You're not trading. Like, you're trading Mrazek and
pick,
you know,
prospect.
Did we ever hear who else was in on him last summer?
Like, that is a great question.
I don't remember any reporting coming out that he was flip-flopping between Toronto and Philly or Toronto and St. Louis. Or, you know, I don't remember that ever happening. Like, were the Leafs negotiating against themselves and just handed him 3 years at 3.8? And listen, it was a disaster of a year for him, but it was largely injury-driven. Like, he was injured from the start. He never got healthy, and he never performed. But if their group, Dubas and company, this time last year said, this is the guy, and he's worth a big investment, and that's what it is, 3 years at 3.8, I don't know. I'm not convinced that they're completely out on him. I think they should be.
But it's like,
personally,
how do you actually,
big miss.
How do you improve the roster? You need another goalie, and then you need other stuff. Like, how are you actually supposed to improve the roster?
Well, that's the question. You could handle 3.8 if you had cap flexibility.
Yeah.
Because then you could go, hey, we can spend another four and a half in net, and we could have $8 or $9 million in net and do it by tandem. They don't have that luxury right now. The cap has only gone up $1 million. Morgan Riley's extension kicks in this year, correct?
Yeah.
So, you know, you're going to have to sprinkle the infield again. And so his 3.8 has to be either, you know, moved for flexibility so that you can add another 1.2 onto it and sign Jack Campbell or be in on Kemper or be in on Varlamov. I went through last night just looking for my own, you know, thought process again. Here's a crazy one, guy. I know. What time is it? 4:03.
I don't want to. I love it right away. Right. Peter Mrazek.
Let's just assume Mrazek's money is gone. So we've packaged it up somewhere, and I say we. The Leafs have packaged it up and had to put a sweetener on, and they have that flexibility there. I was going through the league. Cal Peterson makes $5 million a year and has 3 years left on his deal. Jonathan Quick.
Yep.
Has 1 year left at 5.8 and is 36 years old, but he played in 46 games last year plus 7 in the playoffs. So he's a 50-game guy, or is proven, if he's healthy, he is a 50-game guy. But his, you know, his cap hit is 5.8, his real money's 2.5, and he had a 9.10 save percentage. Like, he actually pushed Peterson out of the net down the stretch. So he's a gamer. He's proven that he can play and he wants to play. Like, is somebody in on Jonathan Quick? Maybe it's Edmonton. You know,
it
more
could be.
Than
I mean,
a
he
young
was,
goalie, right?
He is a gamer. You always hold on to that title.
I love that.
You earned that title, but it was 10 years ago, right? Like, they won their cups 10 years ago. It was a long time ago.
2014. Yeah, nine years ago. You're right.
Yeah, 100%. Long time ago when they won their cups. And I think what has become clear here, outside of Campbell re-signing, which I think would be considered a win now, which is actually somewhat shocking considering how much of a roller coaster season he had, where he was an all-star and he had a phenomenal start, and then the wheels completely fell off. By the trade deadline, they had completely fallen off, and he got it back together in the playoffs. I thought he played well. He wasn't unbelievable. It wasn't what
was
we've
fine.
Seen other, but he was good. Yeah, and he was good against the Habs the year before. Like, not the issue as to why they didn't get the job done. But now, because of the way things have twisted in the wind and the way the goaltending market is developing and how many other teams are going to be in on different players, it does feel like it would almost be considered a win if the Leafs can find a way to find the money to keep him. Because he's a UFA for the first time. I think it's in his best interest to get as much money as he can, right? He's into his 30s. This is striking while the iron is hot. This is as good as it's going to get for him in terms of a market. He's not going to sign a 1 or 2 year deal and kick it down the road. He's got to get his deal now. So it would almost feel as if it's a win if you re-sign Campbell, and you can, I think, describe it as that, as a guy we're familiar with, talking as the Leafs here, and someone that's well-liked and someone that can perform, and when he's healthy, he can play and give you a certain status.
Right.
Outside of that, unless they pull a rabbit out of the hat, which is possible, it is possible that goalies can become available, it is becoming increasingly more difficult to picture a scenario where we're standing here on July 15th or September 1st and looking at the goaltending and saying, I have so much confidence in that position.
Well,
I can't picture it, Jonas Noodles. I can't see it on labor. So much confidence? Like, I'm sorry, Jonathan Quick, I get what you're saying, Noodles. He's 37 with a huge litany of injury issues. I can't sit here on Labor Day as him, your number one, saying I'm so confident in that position.
But so, well, like, Noodles brings up Varlamov. Let's say they traded for Varlamov. He's got 1 year left, $5 million cap hit. I think he'd be pretty – he's good. You'd be pretty confident. No?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Here's the one thing. I wrote this down, though. No move contract. So he has to agree to go.
Like, and Lou's got to agree to hook him up.
Well, they have a number one, right? And they're paying.
Yeah, they do. And that's – but what I'm saying is that Lou – not only Lou, Varlamov has to go – Toronto's the destination I want to go.
Right.
So that you know, you factor in Lou saying – you know, you're not giving him away for a seventh rounder. Like, Lou's going to probably try and pinch Kyle somewhere along the way. And then he's going to agree to go. So, yes, in a perfect world, Jonas, like, lay it out for Varlamov, because I do like him too. I think Hayes, that would be a good
pickup. He's got history. Well, I would think, just quickly tagging on that, my assumption would be the wave would come with an immediate extension. That would be how
34.
Yeah,
okay,
34.
But he's got the leverage, Jonas. Like, if Dubas and
you
company are like,
me?
That's our guy. You want me to waive? You can tack on two more years. And I'll bet you
if I'm
his agent, you have to demand
Can I play a game with you guys?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to give you four scenarios, and you tell me which one you like best. All right? Does that work?
Yep.
Sure.
All right, number one, re-sign Jack Campbell. So let's, like, what do you think is, like, a reasonable contract that you would accept if you're Jack Campbell? What, like 4 years, $5 million?
Something in that ballpark. Maybe 4.5 for a discount for Toronto.
Okay,
maybe.
Well, that's if Jack's willing to do that, because my understanding is you're hearing that the numbers are higher than that.
Okay, so if it's higher than that, then you can probably cross it off.
Okay.
But so let's say it's around there. He takes a little bit of a discount.
Four at five. Let's call it four years at five.
Campbell.
Number two, you sign Ville Husso. You give him a little less than Jack Campbell. Let's say you give him what, Noodles? 4x4?
Yes, 4 years at four.
Okay, that's number three. That's number two. Number three, I like this route. You just sign Marc-Andre Fleury, let's say, for 2 years and what? Noodles, 4.5?
Well, okay.
I don't know what he's going to take. Like, he's a wild card.
It didn't seem like he wanted to come up here at the deadline.
That's what I was going to say. I would be shocked. Number three would be my number one. If you could make it happen.
Me too.
But I think it's 99.9%.
Wow. Let's just say you did a really good sell job. You really sold him on coming to Toronto. Let's put that as number three.
So, okay? Number four.
Then Jonas, all I'm going to say on number three is it's whatever he wants to play here in Toronto for. You have to make that happen. So if it's $5 or $6 million, you've got to find the money somewhere else to make it happen.
I'm with you on that one.
Okay.
All right. So number four is trade for Varlamov. So those are the four range of possibilities. Like, obviously, there's others. They could trade for, let's say, St. Louis re-signs Husso and they want to trade Binnington. That's on the table.
Well, Binnington's got
a big number, six a year. Yeah.
And
so which of those do you like best and do you think is most realistic?
How about somebody on a one-year deal on an expiring? Like Varlamov is an expiring contract, right? That's a one-year deal. I don't mind having flexibility in net. I'm looking at all of these scenarios. Who's playing with him? Who's playing with these goalies?
Nobody.
Right,
just,
you.
Just a guy.
You.
None of these guys are.
Just a million-dollar guy.
Right. So none of these guys are playing 60 next
year.
No. Right. So we're looking at 50 plus potentially.
Yep.
And you're gonna go either Shalgren, which I don't know.
No, you can't
know.
Do that.
So
no.
then, so
you gotta
then
sign like Casey DeSmith somehow.
Right, but I mean, DeSmith is 30.
Yeah, 30.
He's 31 and played 97 career games.
Yep.
Like that's I'd rather have Eric Comrie, who's 27,
sure.
and unproven. You know, has played 28 sure. games, or Wedgwood, a guy who's played 77
like
career games. Like, you're gonna have to go in that area. And go grab somebody who is, you know, either needs to push through or is kind of like a got limited NHL experience. But for me, the question mark is, what is Husso? Husso's had 64 career games.
He started 57.
But he played 40 last year for St. Louis and pushed Binnington out of the net until Binnington grabbed it back. So we don't know what Husso is. I come back to Hayes' comment. Maybe the safest signing is the guy you know.
But is that safe to give a guy 4 years at $5 million who's literally had one
and his
season
career high? His career high was 49 games played, and then you add in the other seven, so he played 56 games in one season.
And like Hayes said, like had the second half, which was not good.
No, and that's like I'm hearing a lot of uncertainty in this conversation. I'm hearing a complete lack of confidence.
Yes. I wanted Jonas's take on John Gibson because I know the analytics guys and the numbers. I've dug through them too.
That bet just because I know he's been one of the best goalies in the league. But there's like these last couple years,
three
the contract is huge.
6.4 for 5 years.
Huge, but he can play 60 games. Like, I don't have any doubt about that. I think he could go four rounds. Like, I think he could go toe-to-toe with Vasilevsky in a playoff series. But, like, there's the contract, and then there's recency bias, I guess, creeping in.
I did the thing on Gibson today, and I tried to make a case for him and to make a case against him, right? So the case against him, let's start with the negative.
Okay. I'm curious where this goes.
What's it going to take to get him? Pat Verbeek's
nothing.
What do you mean, nothing?
With There's that contract, he's not a positive asset, is he?
No. Absolutely he is. Look, there are how many teams that need starting goaltenders
many. How many teams are there?
Edmonton, Washington, New Jersey, Washington, Toronto, Colorado, Minnesota, St. Louis.
Minnesota has Talbot signed.
Okay, but if they, like Talbot is
St. Louis
a tandem
has Binnington.
Guy. Okay, but they're trying to wheel him, basically.
I love Binnington anyway.
There's like five or six teams, and two or three of them are pretty bad.
Well
true, but if it's a young guy that you think you can grow with, I mean, I don't know.
Gibson's coming 29,
yep.
So he's going to be a 29-year-old goaltender this year. So I think it's not – I don't think it's a song and dance you get for Gibson. You're going to have to trade something legit for him.
Well, like let me ask you, would you trade something legit for him? Like, if you're any of these teams?
If you're desperate.
With that contract?
Well, it comes down to whether or not you believe in him. Like, clearly, the contract factors in. But if you don't believe in the guy, then you're not even making a call.
But let's say do believe in him. You're going to give up significance. Doesn't Anaheim need to get off the contract, not vice versa?
No, why would they want to get off the contract? They're not pressed
they're
up
rebuilding.
Against the cap.
They're rebuilding.
Yeah, but the contract, they might take on somebody else's contract just to either to get to the floor or stay in the middle. Like they're not a team that, you know, is dying to move contracts because their owner's saying, like, get rid of them. Yeah, they're in a retool. But I would say I would move Gibson if I was Anaheim to try and get a young asset out of a team and say, you know what, I need another young defenseman. I need another young forward to add into this core. Like, to me, Gibson has value because, Jonas, I'll go back to the comment that you just said. You actually said it. I heard you say,
well,
I think he can go distance in the playoffs. I think he would be a guy that, you know, on a skill set could go, you know, head-to-head with a Vasilevsky. You're actually selling Pat Verbeek. you're
I'm
selling
both
me.
Sides.
Yeah, I agree. So you,
yeah.
I think Gibson has value. But again, let's go on the negative. 904, 903, 904 in the last 3 years. Anaheim hasn't been a great defensive juggernaut. He hasn't played well, so it goes hand in hand. I do believe sometimes, and I'll bring the – let's bring Kyle Dubas into this argument. Sometimes you have to look forward and say, what is this guy capable of?
Yeah.
He saw in Michael Bunting. Michael Bunting was in the minors last year, playing in Arizona's minor league team and up and down. You know, the Blue Jays, Ricky Ray, they grabbed him off of the scrap heap pile, and you know, he was had a down season. To me, you have to find value in guys who have talent. So maybe the asking price isn't as high, but I think Gibson is a 60-game starter that a lot of teams will covet.
Okay, Hayes, you're Kyle Dubas. Mm-hmm. You make the call to Jamie, who's Pat Verbeek. What are you offering?
Well, I think the fact that his contract is so large and so significant and the way he has played recently, it does diminish his value on the trade value. It does. Like, this is not the same Gibson they would have been trading 3 years ago, where it would have been a massive ransom.
Yep.
Like, I don't believe it's Nylander.
I don't believe that.
But I think it would be Sandin plus. You know, it would be Sandin, probably another prospect, and I don't know. You know, is it a pick somewhere? Not a necessarily high one.
And Anaheim retains half?
Well, I mean, if you're asking for that, then you got to pay more, Jonas. Like, that's the thing. If they're retaining half, they're not going to retain half over 5 years left on the deal.
That's true.
They're not going to do that. It comes down to how they would evaluate Gibson. Like, I think the point here, if you're the Leafs, you find who the best goalie is. Who is the best goalie? And then you find a way to acquire him or sign him and then worry about the dollars afterwards.
But, Hayes, all of those goalies have, like, these little, like, asterisks attached to them.
That's the position the organization's put themselves in.
Yes.
Like, this is my issue with this idea that every year you want flexibility. I'm okay with that if you have somebody in the wings. They have not had anybody in the wings for 30 years.
Yeah.
30 years.
Well, they had one guy.
They're wingless.
They had one guy.
What happened to that guy?
We won't get into that trade.
Tuukka, they flipped him. Exactly.
Right.
And we know that. And they thought they had another guy in the wings, and it turned out, again, wingless. I'd be fine with, hey, let's keep doing this year after year, bring in someone until the guy, you know, he's 20 now, give him another year or two, and then he's going to be the next Vasilevsky, right? Like they did with Ben Bishop in Tampa. Keep Bishop for a while, flip him because this kid's coming, and you can't believe what we have here, right, in New York. Keep Georgiev, and then we're ready to flip once this guy shows up. The Leafs don't have it. To my knowledge, they have nobody in the organization who they believe is on the verge of being a stud goalie. Not necessarily an NHL goalie. Could be someone that is a tandem, could be someone that makes it, has NHL talent. But I don't believe they have someone who they have penciled in for a year from now or 2 years from now who will be the starter for the next 10 years.
Right.
And they haven't done that in 30 years. And it doesn't come up enough. I harp on it every offseason. It's absolutely a black hole. And it's something that needs to be rectified. And I know it's easier said than done because a lot of these great goalies get found in the second round, seventh round. It's a crapshoot. You got to get lucky. But they are long overdue to get lucky. 30 years. They have not drafted and developed a stud. It's always the same story. Got to go get Cujo. Got to go get Eddie. Got to go get Raycroft. Got to go get the monster. Got to go get the Toskel. It's just all the time. All the time. You're back to square one. And this is the position they put themselves in where I don't think Fleury's coming up. I don't think there's a chance he's coming up. Varlamov very well could not want to come either or just say I'm not waving.
Right.
And then if Jack Campbell's like, listen, I got offered 6 years at this, then they may just say, okay, we have to scratch you off. And they might be sitting here in 2 weeks thinking, what are we going to do? Like, who are we going to get, and how are we going to rectify this problem? I don't see that because I think Dubas and company are well aware of the issue, and if they have to, they will go out there and spend on it. But they might have to overspend, which circles me back to the Gibson conversation. If it's August 1st and they have nothing – guess who's waiting for your call? Pat Verbeek. And guess who's not interested in eating money or just taking that player you offered 2 weeks ago? That's the position they could find themselves in, where they're way behind the eight ball and they got to overpay. But they have to do it. You have to have a goaltender. You can't go anywhere without it.
Well, the team that just won the Stanley Cup overpaid technically on paper for Darcy Kemper, but they didn't because they won the Cup.
They won it. They don't have to
so
answer
Joe
for
Joe Sakic doesn't have to answer for, no. you know, losing out on Grubauer and, you know, a first-rounder and Timmins and a prospect for Kemper from Arizona. Arizona just sat back and said, yeah, you know, this is the asking price for Kemper because by all accounts, Edmonton was in on Kemper too. And you know what? Good on Bill Armstrong out there. Sat back and said, I've got an asset. He's a good goaltender. He's proven. I went through Kemper's numbers last night. He played 57 games in the regular season and another 16 in the playoffs. He played 73 games this year. 6'5 goaltender. Yes, did he have some warts? Did he have a little bit of injury issues? Guy played 73 games and won a cup. Like nobody, he's getting a contract, like and getting a serious contract.
Well, Kemper's not a guy we brought up here, but that could be the fifth option.
That's a pricey option.
But again, it is. Like, I can't.
And he's 32. He's going to be 33 next year.
I know. It's not ideal. Like it really, it's not.
They're all not great choices.
And that gets back to how I started this conversation. Yep. It's tough to imagine. 2 or 3 weeks from now where you're sitting there and saying, wow, it's a position of strength. If Dubas can pull this off, and this is what he gets paid to do, this is his job, and you know he's thought of every possible angle, and he's planted seeds everywhere because he has to. If he can pull it off, it'll be an incredible job because it
– What does pull it off mean, though?
Well, pull it off for me is either one standalone guy who you can say that guy has a legitimate shot of being a top 10 goalie in the league. Like
yeah,
a legitimate shot, or a tandem where you say those are two like good goalies. You know, like those are two you'll be okay. And yes, it's not going to be perfect, but okay. I like what you did there. You turned things over, and let's see what you got.
Maybe it's a scenario like I said, it's Campbell and Wedgwood. It's Campbell and Mackenzie Blackwood out of New Jersey, like who by all accounts potentially is available. Because New Jersey is in, they want to upgrade. They want to look at Jack Campbell. They want to look at Darcy Kemper, all of that. So I was looking through the trade targets. Varlamov, Jonathan Quick, John Gibson, Blackwood, Vanacek, Samsonov, Georgiev. Like, I'm sure I'm missing a few. Those are just off the top of my head. You know, would St. Louis make Binnington available if they can bring back Husso? Guys like that. Matt Murray, I'm sure, is available in Ottawa. Cool. You know, there might be a buyout situation Matt Murray gets bought out and there's familiarity with him.
But that's your number two guy. Like you sign him for $1 million.
Right. Like he's
but then you still need another guy.
Well, yeah, I'm saying that. Like I'm saying he might enter the conversation of goalies that are available on value contracts if something happens with him. You know, Braden Holtby is out there. Casey DeSmith, you mentioned. You know, Scott Wedgwood, I like him in Dallas. He's 30 years old, kind of been a guy who's grinded, but I do think he's one of those late bloomers that can give you good NHL minutes.
Okay. Like that can work if that's your backup and he's giving you 25 games, 30 games. But on a good team,
it comes back to who's the guy that
But that's it.
I
who
said
starts
to Steph,
for you game one.
Exactly. I said to Steph last night, to me, a number one goaltender is it's a story when he's not playing that night. So I go, if I'm looking at Calgary and Dan Vladar's playing, I'm like, okay, Markstrom's not playing. That's rare. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, Demko or Vasilevsky. Those are your clear-cut ones. That's who I define as a clear-cut one, when it's a story when that guy's not playing. If it's tandem, the Robin Lehner situation, the 50-game guys, those are the guys that you have to be comfortable with playing either one of those guys, and one guy has to push through during the regular season to play for you in the playoffs. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see what they do.
Yeah, it most certainly will. Looks like we have a trade, actually.
Yeah,
I
just saw that. I would have liked him for Toronto. That
Kevin
kid
Fiala.
Is, that kid's expensive. Really good. I know, but if you
for a first rounder and a prospect,
this is a later conversation, and I know your head will explode, Jonas.
Oh boy, is it trade Willie?
Yes, and bring in Fiala.
Oh boy,
you need a different look.
What is that contract going to look like?
It might be the same as William. That's the thing. It might be, but Fiala's a different player. It might be something like that. That's what I'm looking at. And okay. I haven't circled 88 to move out. I'm not trying to run that guy out of town whatsoever. I like him as a player, all of that. I'm saying if they are going to be try and go back and make their team look a little bit different, you might have to be really creative. And the guys like Fiala, like, I think he's a fantastic player.
Yeah,
and he's
really
just starting to come into his.
All right, we'll get into that a little bit later on. Dreg's coming up just after 5 o'clock. We got role play level of concern in about an hour. Will Middlebrooks will join us, former Sox. He's an analyst down with Nesson. The Jays walking off, what Vladdy had to say to Montoya, our boy Chicken Strips last night, the bullpen. Yeah. There's a lot to get into with the Jays. They're back in action tonight, and look who's on the mound, the exact guy you want on the mound. We got Manoah on the mound for the Jays looking to sweep the Sox. We'll get into that and more with Will Middlebrooks next. So the Jays walked off the Sox last night, and the rally gets started in the ninth with Alejandro Kirk pinch hitting. And the guy is an absolute machine. Over his last month, he's hitting 400. He's got an OPS over 1,200. And it was like you knew he was getting a hit. You knew that's the guy you want to set the table. Springer walks, Bichette hits him in, and obviously Vladdy walks it off. And Vladdy, I guess, told Montoya before going out there, this is over. Now, I'm curious how often that happens and then you get punched out. Do you go back and, like, look at your manager and apologize? Like, what is the rule when you call your shot and then your shot doesn't actually happen? Maybe Will Middlebrooks is familiar with that. He's a former Red Sox himself. He's an analyst down at Nesson, and he joins us back on Overdrive. What's up, Will?
How are we doing, guys? And just to make it clear, I was never the guy to be like, hey, game over if I'm up there. No, that wasn't me. It's guys that put up MVP-type numbers all the time, like Vladdy, they can get away with that. Cause even if they get out, the manager's probably still feeling pretty good about having them up there.
Yeah, see, that's what I'm curious about. I love the story. I love the attitude. And Vladdy was going nuts, man. You would think he walked off for the ALCS, moving on to the World Series last night. It was a really cool celebration. But if he strikes out or pops out or whatever, does he have to apologize to Montoya, or does he just walk right by him and say, what do you want out of me, man?
Like, no.
Yeah.
Not at all. What's Montoya going to do there? Like, was he thinking about pinch hitting for him? But he said that, so he left him in. No, like, that's your guy. That's your guy. Round ball, round bat. I mean, law of averages, whatever you want to look at. Baseball's hard. If he gets out there, there's a lot better chance of him getting out than getting a hit. But, I mean, he came through.
It sure did. And again, the emotion, I mean, Vladdy's a pretty emotional guy anyway. But I think the nature of the series, the fact that the Jays have been struggling a little bit coming in, the Sox have been the hottest team in baseball. They obviously really performed well in Game 1 on Monday. And last night, they had the lead. Their bullpen blows it again, the Jays do. But they rally in the ninth and walk it off with Vladdy. What do you make of that kind of emotion coming out of a guy like Guerrero, considering it's, you know, game two of a three-game series in June, and they're well into a playoff spot? You know, I mean, were you surprised at all by Vladdy's emotion and what he was showing after he got that hit?
Nothing Vladdy does surprises me. I don't know how vocal he is in a clubhouse, but I know for a fact of talking to guys about how much work he puts in. You know, we've seen him, you know, get the weight off. That shows some leadership skill right there. And then just his actions speak louder than words, the way he plays the game. So to see him get fired up, that's not going to do anything but put light a fire under that team even more. They knew how big this series was. They wanted to make a point. I mean, the Sox, I think, are 2-7 against the Jays this year. They played earlier in the year when the Sox were not the same team they are right now, or they have been over the past 6 weeks. So this was a big series. It was a big measuring stick for both teams, in my opinion. And what we saw last night was a shortage in the bullpen by the Red Sox. But the bullpen has been hot and cold. They've been really streaky. They'll go a week or two being awful, then they'll go 3 or 4 weeks being very, very good with under a 3 ERA as a club. So obviously we know what's going on with Tanner Houck and him being in the closer role now and him not being there and them having to go to Tyler Danis for 2 innings and the ninth inning, including having to face one of the best top, you know, 3 or 4 guys, you know, that make up a lineup in the game. So that Tyler Danish has been good for them, but not in that role. And that's not the guy you want in that situation.
Yeah. And if anyone's not familiar, Tanner Houck is not vaccinated. So he's not he can't come up. He can't perform. And that happened earlier in the year in the series up here in Toronto where there was a similar situation where he wasn't available, burned the Sox, and it really burned them last night with Kirk into Springer, into Bichette, into Vladdy. And I noticed online, you know, Boston media just crushing him and some fans crushing him. He's getting crushed, is he not?
No, he is. It's been tough, which, I mean, I understand personal choice and this and that, but at the end of the day, you know, you're getting paid a lot of money to play baseball. I know just for some people, I can't speak on this, on how he feels about the situation, and I'm not going to get political by any means, because this is baseball, and it doesn't matter. It's about baseball, and it's about, in this situation, he let his team down. At the end of the day, he let his team down. That was his inning. That was his spot. You knew it was going to come up at least once or twice in this series because of how evenly matched these teams are, and there was going to be close games. And their best right-handed reliever outside of him is John Schreiber. He had to throw the seventh because that was the top of the lineup in the seventh, and they needed him there. They couldn't stretch him out for two innings and then expect him to be available tonight as well. So it was Danish was the guy. They didn't want to go to Strom or Diekman, the lefty, because they liked the right-on-right matchup and analytics best in that, whatever you want to call it. But they thought that was their best choice. I trust Alex Cora with anything when it comes to the game. His baseball IQ is through the roof. Those are the 26 guys that they had yesterday, and they did their best to make it work. Just didn't happen.
Well, and Cora, I think, is in such a tough spot because he was getting grilled after the game, and he said that. He's like, I got my 26 up here, and these are the 26 we're going to use. He's got to be fuming, but he's also got to be careful because this is the only team it applies to. You know, once you get back down to the States, you don't have to worry about this kind of stuff. So I'm sure he might bury Hauk, you know, privately, although I think that's dangerous because of personal choice, et cetera. I'm not sure how Cora's supposed to answer those questions after the game.
Yeah, it's a tough situation. And you know, I hate saying, well, if the season ended today, but if the season ended today, the Sox would be playing the Jays in Toronto in the wild card game. So you would be without Chris Sale as well, because as far as we know, he's unvaccinated as well, so he wouldn't be there. We wouldn't have Tanner Houck either, and that would be a whole other story if Sale's not able to be there. But it's a really tough spot for AC to be in. I thought he handled it the best he could, and you kind of just have to dance around those questions because you don't want to throw anyone under the bus. You kind of just got to be politically correct. No pun intended.
Yeah, Jays Sox tonight. The Jays going for the sweep. We're chatting with former Red Sox and NESN analyst Will Middlebrooks.
So say you're going head-to-head with the Blue Jays in the playoffs, and, you know, you're aware of Vladdy, you're aware of Springer, guys that can, you know, really bring it, and Alejandro Kirk steps up to the plate. What is your first impression? Because he's a folk hero up here. I love him.
That
place
was buzzing when he pinched hit last night.
But I mean, like, I just want to know the impressions from outside this market, from a guy who's played and seen all different shapes and sizes of players and how effective they are. You know, what's your impression of him?
Well, the first thing I heard was he was built like a fire hydrant, and I thought that was a good comparison. But man, can this kid hit? And he's 20. He's only 23, right? Correct me if I'm wrong. I think he's 23 years old.
He's young, yep.
But he's as watching him throughout this season, because I watched him in the first month, and I was thinking, okay, maybe he's just hot. Guys don't know how to attack him, this and that. I like him behind the plate. Is he really this good offensively? I think so. I feel like he's just a pure hitter. Like, he's not afraid to go the other way. If you hang it, he'll crush you. He can hit with some pop as well. He got a K percentage under 10%, which in this era of baseball is special for any player. He walks more than he strikes out, which we don't really see anymore. Which really that, you see guys that walk more than they strike out. It seems like they're like little, like punching Judy's or like a David Eckstein just taking their singles. But he can hit with pop too, and he's got a 3.3 war. I think it's tied for 11th in baseball and first among catchers. Like, this kid, regardless, I mean, it's a typical don't judge a book by its cover, because he is playing like one of the best players in the game right now.
Well, I was just curious. The Yankees are 13 games up, I think, on the Red Sox and Jays. If you were going to pick a team to catch them, you could even include Tampa if you wanted. Is there anyone you think that is capable of catching New York?
Unless we get like an Angels in the outfield situation, there is absolutely zero chance anybody's catching the New York Yankees if they are healthy. We've seen the past couple of years, like, this is a pretty similar lineup. I think they've had better rotations in the past. I think they have some guys overperforming as far as Jameson Taillon and Nasty Nestor Cortez in the five spot. Look, really, he's been really good this year. But if they're healthy, which they have been, they've had guys go on and off the IL here and there in spots, but not like the last couple of years where we've seen three or four of them at a time on the IL for 3 weeks at a time. We haven't seen that. And when they're all out there, this team is really, really good. They live and die by the home run, right? We know that. That's who they are. Well, they have 123 homers, I think, in 74 games. That's like leads the league by like 10 at least, you know, and but they're pitching too. So you're going to go out there, you're going to be the old school Bronx Bombers. They're going to bully you. They're going to hit home runs. They can beat you by 15, and then you can be up three like we saw against Houston. Your closer's on the mound, Ryan Pressly, and they come back and beat you when you have them on the ropes. So this is just a complete ball club right now, and anybody playing them should be worried about it.
Yeah, they are. Always great catching up with you, Will. Thank you for doing this. We'll do it again down the road.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys.
You got it. Will Middlebrooks, longtime MLB-er, former Red Sox analyst down with Nesson. And, yeah, the Yankees just, I mean, they just continue to roll. Like a 13-game lead on teams like Toronto, Boston, and Tampa, who are legit. Like, they're all above 500. They're all in playoff positions. And it's a race that feels like a formality. You just got to play it out. Anything is possible. But, like, for the Jays, they've got to get this pitching staff figured out.
Yeah,
and it's not even about catching the Yankees. Like, their bullpen, you know, Romano is a guy who splits on the road compared to home. We talked about that last week. He's not pitching a lot. Like, it feels like something's going on there, possibly. You know, you've got Garcia on the IL. You can't have Trent Thornton going out there every other day, or it feels like it. They need, I think, a couple of arms in the bullpen and guys that can give you outs. Like, once you get to the playoffs, you're looking for anywhere between 9 and, like, 15 outs from your bullpen every game.
Well, and Hayes, like, don't you really just,
every game,
you really just need three starters, really, once you get to the playoffs. It's just like, who's the third guy?
Right. And at this point, it is going to be Barrios. Mm-hmm. Like, it is. It's going to be Manoah, Gausman, Barrios. Like,
in theory, right?
Like, yes, wow. But also,
if he has a 6 ERA by the playoffs,
wouldn't that, like, that would be one of the craziest developments we've seen in a long, long time in a city, any sport, any player. If Barrios plays himself out of a playoff rotation, year one of a 7-year deal, $131 million, I would be shocked. Like, I would be shocked.
Yeah,
I'm not saying they'd be comfortable. I'm not saying they'd be overly excited about it, but I feel like they'd give him the ball and give him an opportunity. You got to show faith in him. Again, that's putting the cart way before the horse. They're still a few months away from that. But if he's in that position where he's not playing well, what you're hoping for is he gives you, like, twice through the rotation, right? You're saying, can you give us, like, 4 innings? Can you give us 12 outs? If that's the case, and that's not unreasonable. There are not many starters in playoff baseball in 2022 get to go a third time through the rotation.
Yeah.
And if it is, it's a guy who's either pitching exceptionally well or is a stud who the manager has faith in. So, right. Again, you're looking at, like, an unbelievable outing. Unbelievable is like seven innings. Maybe. You know, that's the Scherzers. That's the Verlanders. That's the DeGroms. Like, can you give us 7? And then still you're looking for 6 outs minimum out of the bullpen.
If it started today, Hayes, who would be your third starter?
Again, it's Barrios. Like,
today.
It would be.
Yeah.
Today. Even today. Even with Stripling pitching well again last
Chicken
night.
Strips.
He gave 5 innings. Yeah. He you know, what was he, 2 earned last night? He pitched well. He got out of a jam early. Like, he is pitching well. He is consistently pitching well every fifth day. I have faith in Stripling, but I still think Barrios is the guy that would get the ball there. Listen, his numbers are awful. Like, he is getting hit really hard. The amount of home runs he's given up are crazy.
We should check the FIP and the xERA and all that.
They're not flattering. They're
not
flattering. So it's like Manoah, and that's the beauty of having Manoah on the mound tonight, is this is a Cy Young night for Manoah. Where the Cy Young at the end of the year is about wins above replacement, is about ERA, is about stuff, is about aura. A lot of different detail goes into it. But there are moments in time over the course of a 32-33 start season where you circle and say, that felt a little bit different. He's done it at Yankee Stadium. Those always felt different. Closing out a potential sweep against the Red Sox at home, I think this will make a lot of noise tonight. I think if Manoah goes out there and gives them 7 tonight, pitches really well, sets them up to win a ball game tonight, this is one that pushes you that much further ahead, because he's got a higher wins above replacement than any starter in the American League. There's only one starter with a lower ERA in the American League.
I heard
take
you
care
yesterday,
of business
Hayes,
tonight. That's going to go a long way.
I think you called Gausman having the start that he did. So are
yeah,
you calling that with Manoah tonight? Are you ready to?
I'm not ready to go there.
I think it should be a thing.
I want to believe in it tonight. I think it's needed because I really don't have a lot of faith in the bullpen.
It's needed, but it may not be delivered. But has Manoah had any like explosive bad starts?
He had one earlier in the year.
I think he
went like 2 1/3 or something and got hit pretty hard. But not many noodles.
No, he's been very reliable for a guy who is still kind of, you know, honing his craft on the job.
Still very young.
Yeah, very young. But he's a horse, man. Like, just gets up there and throws. Like, he's a beast.
Yeah.
He's a presence. That's what every time you watch him, he's a presence on the mound.
You know what? I'm going through his game log right now. There is nothing under 5 innings.
Hmm.
I thought I recalled one where he got hit pretty hard. But no, I'm looking at his
game log
right now.
I thought he got hit hard early and settled down in that game.
That's what I think happened.
That's what it was.
He had a couple, like against Cincinnati, against the Angels, he got hit pretty hard. But his quote-unquote worst start of the year in terms of innings pitched was at Cleveland. He gave them 5 innings. And that game, he only gave up 2 earned.
Hmm.
But he must have been throwing a lot of pitches. I think he threw 95 pitches through 5 innings, so that was the end of the road.
I like that name, Noodles, calling it an explosive start. I'm going to start using that for goalies.
An explosive start. You need an explosive start.
It recalls other things besides sports, but
yeah.
I like it. I believe in this kid clearly. I don't see how you can't. I'm sweeping the Sox the way that they've been playing. Their bats have been really hot coming into the series. I think it'll be a difficult start for them. They'll make him work.
Right.
But I think that'll probably be reciprocated. I think he'll make them work tonight as well. And, if he can go into the 6th or 7th inning and have an outing tonight, like, that'll make a lot of noise. A lot of noise. Deserved noise, considering how well he's pitched this year. Darren Dreger in about 20 minutes. Role play level of concern at 5:30. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. I just can't get over these Alejandro Kirk stats. Like, the buzz in the building last night when he was coming in to pinch hit for Tapia was, like, you could feel it through the screen. It was noticeable. I thought the dugout was, like, riled up for him. Like, they were fired up to see him go up there. And he's just, his approach at the plate, like, he's not moving. He looks very compact, which he is. And he was sitting on that pitch, and he laced that to left field, and it was like, here we go. The rally started. And, again, he's got a .414 on base percentage. The next closest Blue Jay is Vladdy at .364. He is 50 points higher than Vladimir Guerrero Jr. with an on-base percentage. And his OPS, it's even more extended because he's got the highest slugging percentage on the team. With a .527 slug, Vladdy's at .505, so he's got a .941 OPS.
Yeah, he's
batting
fire.
.325. Like, it's unbelievable what this guy's doing at 23 years old.
Every day
you expect him to get a hit, if not
is
more.
Is it sustainable? That's the thing. Like,
well,
is
that
it
I don't
sustainable
know.
What is this guy a superstar that they found, what was it, in grapefruit ball, wasn't it? Wasn't it like something ridiculous, like where they just kind of stumbled across him and gave him like $30,000 to sign?
Well, that's kind of like the Altuve story, right? I'm not getting to a point where I'm saying this guy's Altuve, but similar in stature. Like, he's a lot bigger than Altuve. Altuve's got like 5% body fat. Kirk's
he's like
a
chunkier.
A little bit of a bigger Altuve, but a smaller guy.
Yes.
Altuve, remember the story where he almost had to beg and plead with the Astro scouts to just get a workout? And you see what Altuve's done with his career, and I'm not predicting that that's what Kirk is going to do. But he's got that approach. Like, he's got moxie at the plate.
Maybe
when he's so dialed in right now, you fully expect that he's going to get on base.
Maybe he's Odor. Isn't Odor a pretty small guy,
Rougned Odor is a small guy. I'm glad you brought that up, actually.
Did you bring these? Where are they?
I have these right here. Look at this thing, okay? I was at one of these dollar stores over the weekend. We went in there. I don't even remember. I was with my kids. We went in there to buy tape or something. And I'm walking around. Naturally, every time you go in there, my kids are like, can we get something? And it's like, all right, run down to the aisle. You know there's stuff down there. The dollar store, it's false advertising. Everything's $4 now. $3, $4, not a dollar for anything. You can't get anything in there for a dollar. Like, if anything, it's $1.25. Inflation at the dollar store, that's a concern. But I could not believe when I saw this. A Rougned Odor figurine with him in Texas. And, like, who is buying these anywhere? Does anyone in the Odor family want these? Anyone down in Texas want these? Let alone in the greater Toronto area. And there were multiple ones. I had to buy both. Had to get them off the shelves. We cannot have the kids of Toronto seeing Rougned Odor being advertised. It's just, it can't happen. And the dollar store, whichever one it was, Dollarama, Dollar Tree, Dollar Plant, can't happen.
He did have the punch that was heard around the world.
It was a good punch. I'll give him that. He connected. He hit him on the chin.
Why don't you send it to Joey Bax?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, it'd be one thing if there was a vintage Bautista in there.
What if it was just a punch?
What if it had like an action in it with like literally all it did, the arm punched?
Yeah, right. Like those Rock'em Sock'em robots.
Exactly.
Pow or whatever. Yeah, possibly. But I got to get these out of my house. Like they're freaking me out here. So we're going to do something probably this week, maybe next.
Okay.
Anyone wants to send in the worst take possible, we'll give out a Rougned Odor figurine. We'll figure out the details on it. I have a feeling a lot of Blue Jay fans will say we don't want it. Yeah. But could be up for grabs, all right? So more on that into the next hour. Role play level of concern. We have a Kevin Fiala contract update. We'll tell you about it. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.